Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Once more into the breach, my friend Patrick.
Hi,
Patrick
Jim.
Patrick Laverty, along with Jim Gerhardt, talking a little bit about some of the things going on. Oh, here's something really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed this story. Merriam-Webster, the dictionary.
Yes.
Announced that it is adding the word sheeple to its official dictionary. A combination of sheep and people, the term is used to describe people who are docile, compliant, and easily influenced. I used that for years, and we had a sound effect going for years with the sheeple.
The sheeple.
Yeah, yeah. And we'd come up with some outrage that some public official or other, somebody in the blob, the establishment or the establishment
right.
itself, some atrocity they committed on the taxpayers.
Right.
And we rail about that and said, in response, the people of New Jersey said, and then, meh.
Right.
Yeah, okay. We got a story here, Patrick. You, yeah. of course, as a news executive here, would know it more clearly than I, but I was struck by this story of a school teacher.
Yes.
Who was suspended from his job. Now, this is one of the most egregious examples of, well, almost in a bad word, the scatological product of a bull, the produce. This got to be the dumbest thing ever. This is a teacher who was suspended. I don't know if he was fired or what happened later.
I think just suspended at this point. I would have to check on that, but I think just suspended at this point.
Now, he was teaching a class, presumably in history or touching on history anywhere. Anyway, and he made the quote, and I cannot quote it exactly. I wasn't there. But what, according to published reports, what he said was that in a context of talking about leadership
yes.
and character, and he made the remark that Hitler, although a despicable person, was a good leader. He got suspended.
Right.
Well, how can you deny that? What he said is true.
I think to look at it from certain prisms, yes, the followers and the people who supported him felt that he was the right leader for their time.
There is no other prism to look at it.
Right.
Germany, at the time he came into power in the early 30s, Germany, the German people were the most educated, the most sophisticated people, resourceful people in the world, for all probability, most intelligent, best educated people. And yet he came along and turned them into some howling, vicious mob through his leadership. He led them into what followed.
Yeah.
How the hell can you say that he wasn't an effective leader?
Right.
Now, here's the thing that got me. It is a great lesson for kids, because he did stress, according to published reports, Hitler was despicable, he was evil, he was depraved, and this was a horrible thing. The lesson is, kids, boys and girls, just be damn sure who you let be your leader. Because right. because somebody can lead and is a good leader does not mean that he is a good person and that this is a positive move.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
So how could you object to that? See, there's so many things that you can't say, you can't think.
Mm-hmm.
Almost literally you can't think now because I was looking for the story about the kid who got suspended from school. there's so many of these stories. This was not in New Jersey this time. The kid who got suspended from school because as part of an art project,
yes,
he had made what has been legendarily a hero's sort of battlefield type grave.
Uh-huh.
Simulation of it.
Okay.
In which, remember, they would do that and they would put the rifle with the bayonet into the ground, put his helmet on it with the dog tags around it.
Right, right.
Right. A person killed honorably in battle.
Sure.
Well, he got suspended for that.
Mm.
And so, in looking that up, because I'd forgotten some of the details, I think I just went on Google about pupils. Suspensions.
Right.
Thousands of these things pop up.
We had a story this very morning in our newscast about two kids who were suspended. Now, think of how smart they were to have done this. And we're going through our own cybersecurity issues here in this building right now. But these two kids go to Secaucus High School. They're freshmen, 14 years old. And they had kids come up to them. I guess they were technologically savvy, and they had kids come up to them and say, hey, I've got a test coming up, but it's online because all of the curriculum is done through the computers now. Can you fudge with the online providers so that we don't have to take our test? And they actually were able to hack into the computer, the school's computer system, and shut down the wireless so that these kids didn't have to take their test.
Huh.
And they were criminally charged.
Well, they should be. I mean, the point is that's something that should get your attention.
Right. But, you know, they had the knowledge and the wherewithal to do it. Fellow students acknowledged, yeah, it was probably the wrong thing to do, but I'm impressed that they did it. they were good at what their objective was.
Legendarily, these great computer hackers end up getting big paying jobs with computer companies.
Right.
In their security divisions.
It reminds me of, do you remember the Al Campanis incident on Nightline? Al Campanis was the Los Angeles Dodgers executive who went on, they were doing an anniversary show about Jackie Robinson breaking into the major leagues. And he went on and he said something about, black ex-players not having the certain capacities to be executives in baseball, and he was fired the next day. And the legend goes that he was then, the day after that, offered a position within the league office as their first ever head of race relations. And the commissioner at the time said, we need a way to deal with the Al Campanises of the world. And luckily, I have someone on staff who's familiar with how they think.
who is?
Right.
None other than da-da.
Right.
Al Campanis.
Right. Exactly.
But I was looking for was these stupid things.
Yeah.
And the things that came up. Kids suspended from school. Mm-hmm. One child was caught saying grace at lunch.
Oh,
but
my
if you
goodness.
Want to look that up, how did we get this crazy?
I know.
This nutty. And there was a, here's where we're going. Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland, wrote a limerick that is so relevant, so germane to our time. He said, there was a man from Hong Kong who never did anything wrong. He lay on his back with his head in a sack and spoke not a word all day long. That's the only way to survive in here. It gets crazier and crazier. So, I could go on, but I won't. But if you look this up, you'll see some of the damnedest things.
Yeah.
I mean, simple things like a Facebook often gets involved in this because I guess the kids are so deeply enmeshed in that. And here was a kid who, and maybe others too, he was suspended for 10 days because there was a picture, somebody put up a picture of some kind of a weapon.
Right.
And he hit the like button.
Right.
And he's out of school for 10 days.
Right. Just because he liked an image that someone else posted.
Yeah,
he didn't generate the image himself. Right.
Oh, no. It had nothing to do with any threat or any even imaginary threat. Well, talking about threats, let's get back to New Jersey. There's a story now you'd be well aware of, Patrick, the possibility of another increase in the gasoline tax in New Jersey.
Yeah, we've been talking about this, too. Now, lawmakers have been slow to kind of admit that this is the road that we're going down. But there's another kind of issue here, rather than just the state gas tax. Late last week, it came out that the federal gas tax could be raised. And that's, I don't know what it is right now. I think it's federal tax is 18 cents a gallon or something like that. And they were talking about possibly a 25-cent increase in that. So now you're talking, instead of 18 cents, you're talking about 43 extra cents per gallon. So that's another layer to this other than just raising it at the state level.
Well, it'll be very interesting, and I'm sure everybody's waiting for the other tax shoes to drop.
Right.
Because the budget, $39 billion budget, I can remember, it seems like yesterday it was 32, and everybody was saying, oh, my God, you know, where's that coming from? Well, of course, kick the can down the road, which, of course, will be done this time. But somehow this stuff has to be paid for. Oh, an interesting story, too. The governor and the legislature had appropriated a certain amount of money for a fund for legal defense for illegal people in the country illegally.
Correct. Yes.
Now, the interesting thing was, instead of the people who are in the country illegally and their representatives saying, oh, thank you, that's nice, they're out there bitching and complaining and demanding more.
More.
That it wasn't enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a service that New Jersey was in any way, shape, or form obligated to provide. Mm. The legislature in power decided to do so. And now it's exactly what you said. There's a little bit of greed on the part of the people who are going to be the beneficiaries.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But on the other hand, is it not possible that under some laws, the state maybe have to do this? Because if you are a criminal citizen or non in this country, or you're here illegally, you get a public defender.
Well, absolutely.
And so is this not just providing public defenders, but it's spreading it out so much with 20 million people in the country illegally.
Right. Right. So. And I think the reason that there is focus on it is there was specific mention made of the money and the resources that were being earmarked just for people in the country illegally. If it had been, hey, we're going to increase our funding for public defenders for everyone. Oh, yes. And anyone who's here illegally will get a piece of that, too. I don't think people would be batting an eye at that. It's that there was this concentration specifically on that portion of the population.
Oh, great. You just wonder, how did we get here this quickly?
It seems to be quick and slow moving at the same time. A lot of these things, I think, have just been developing for years and bubbling under the surface, and now they're finally coming up. But then...
There's so many just totally crackpot stories and things going on.
Yeah.
But the thing is that these self-designated victim groups... Although not that large in population, you talk about tails wagging a dog, just through bullying, and everybody backs down. Again, San Antonio in Texas, where the council had decided to not let Chick-fil-A open a store.
Well,
because Chick-fil-A, apparently, according to them, had not knuckled under this alphabet soup group, QP2X. Minus Y,
right,
over
the LGBTQ,
pi,
right.
Whatever,
right.
I can never remember. Well, I had a brain injury. One of the things I can't remember.
Easy to explain away.
Easy to explain away. I got an excuse. The devil made me do it. but this is absurd because there was no indication. Nobody ever said that this restaurant chain ever denied anybody service. It was anything other than courteous to people who went in there for it.
Oh, my goodness.
And yet it's the owner... had somehow established the fact that they had what is accused to be Christian values, and presumably one of their perceived Christian values or perceived by the group is that they may not, well, what should I say? I was about to use another bad expression, but may not knuckle under to them.
Right.
So they just stomp across the land bullying everybody for absolutely no reason except we can do it and get away with it.
Oh, my goodness. And if you're talking about Chick-fil-A, and look, I've had this conversation with many people in the past. I am able to, I think it's because I work in news, separate the political and social issues from the product. You know, I will listen to Bruce Springsteen's music, although I don't necessarily agree with the things that he's said that are anti-cop. You know, I'll eat at Chick-fil-A, although I don't necessarily agree with where the owner spends his money on other causes.
Yeah.
But a note about Chick-fil-A, you go to their restaurants and the servers there, and it's part of their training, they are the most courteous of any chain that you'll ever encounter. You know, when you talk about that aspect. And also, we had this going on in New Jersey. There was this whole flap with Rider University.
Rider, yes.
Where the president or the dean of students said, well, the students want one thing, but I am obligated to protect the interest. Right,
yeah.
Right. So I'm just going to step down. I'm going to step away because I wash my hands of it. Yeah.
The Pontius Pilate defense.
Right, exactly.
What else is going on in the great state of New Jersey? I was casting about this morning. It's the usual kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to something we talked about before, and I don't want to beat this to death, mm-hmm. that, of course, is the upcoming sentencing of a person who used to work here.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it is transcending the immediate circumstances and personalities into a question, a larger question of how effective is a large public relations campaign,
right.
very well organized and healed, how effective that is on the outcome of a legal matter.
Well, see, there's that word effective again, and we talked about it at the top with Hitler, and mm-hmm. was he or was he not an effective leader? And now you're going to have, you know, did this person get an effective legal defense to effectively shorten his sentence?
Well, I mean, it's obviously legal.
Right.
And you would think that a judge mm-hmm. would be experienced enough to right. understand what's going on here.
Right.
For example, the high appeal by former Governor Chris Christie for leniency.
Mm-hmm.
When Chris Christie was the U.S. attorney in New Jersey,
right.
he prosecuted the heck out of people
right.
who did far less.
Yeah.
The legendary Gang of 44, the Jersey Sting that
sure.
he prosecuted. There wasn't a person in the whole woodpile there who did anything as egregious as this person did, and yet he's right. asking for the leniency.
Well, so, my goodness, I would love to know what Charles Kushner thinks of Chris Christie's letter to Craig Carton.
Yeah. He would not think very highly of it. I'm sure. But I came up with a new legal precept.
Yeah.
Now, much legal material is in Latin or comes from Latin.
Mm-hmm.
I am suggesting, as a new legal term, diabolus face et ud facerem e.
Okay.
That says, the devil made me do it. and the judge, oh, well, of course.
Wow. Okay.
But here we get cases like this one. I don't know that we have to get into the particulars anyway. I think everybody, you know, in New Jersey certainly knows this because of the connection.
Mm.
Pulled out all the stops.
Yeah.
He's got he didn't pull the N card.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised at some point. Mm. But all of these things, but essentially, in addition to you go back to the childhood abuse.
Sure.
But all these are kind of stock part and parcel of things that one trots out.
Yeah.
To prove that you are a victim.
Mm-hmm.
So no longer are you a perpetrator, you actually are a victim.
Right.
You're not only the victim of these terrible things in the past, but you're a victim of some numinous unseen power that gave you an affliction that you are addicted to.
Right. And I think that's a dangerous road to go down, where we perpetuate this. And in some cases, it may be valid. But in some cases, I think it's totally mythical and fabricated. This idea that persistent victimization breeds you to become a perpetrator.
Well, how many people with even worse backgrounds, exaggerated further, live very normal, productive lives
all the time,
never stole $5 million from anybody, even thought about it,
right?
So, which is where this thing all falls down. What will happen? It's very difficult to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you get into a very what I would think is a serious possibility of the judicial system losing a little bit of credibility and ground
mm-hmm.
In this case, if it turns out that this is that it works. So, another thing, this is a sideline. I don't mean this to be any sense accusatory,
yeah.
but my understanding was that this person had gotten into these huge gambling debts
yes.
with sports betting. Does that sound right?
Essentially yes.
sports betting.
Yes. When it
not
was not legal.
Blackjack or something.
Right.
When it was not, well, and when you play that, then you have to watch out, protect your kneecaps at all time if you don't pay the money back.
Sure.
So you get pretty desperate.
Right.
But when he was here, he did a Saturday piece in the Trentonian, the newspaper, on the upcoming professional football schedule.
Right.
And he wrote long pieces, analyses, and made his predictions of who was going to win the game.
Right.
he wasn't right very often, as I remember. So I was thinking, that should have rung a bell
in his head and say,
if I can't pick the winners here, it's not costing anybody anything.
Well, and I would...
Then why am I going down and plunking down money? For?
I would like to go back and look at those columns and see what kind of scores he picked, and if they were odd scores and if they were within certain points of each other. If you ever listen to the very famous broadcaster, Al Michaels, who did Monday Night Football for years. Now he does Sundays on NBC. He's been involved in the sports gambling world, kind of as an aside for years, and few people know about it. But if you listen closely, he will make these kind of muted references on the broadcast to the point spread, which you're not supposed to do, but he'll try to sneak it in there every once in a while. The other thing about the victimization that I was thinking about, just to get back to that, we were saying, well, you should go ask this person about this thing. I wonder if anybody ever asked Victor Hugo, the novelist, what he thought. Because, if Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread. And then spent all these years saying, no, but I'm a victim because they're pursuing me for this bread that I stole.
Yeah.
Where would we end up there?
Well, $5 million would buy a whole lot of bread. I don't have to worry about that. But again, the implication in all the PR thing is that this is an exceptionally wonderful person.
Right.
Now, I'm wondering why he didn't pull the Jim Baker or Jimmy Swaggart argument. It's right. Tending in that way, which is that I was such a great, powerful force for good in the world,
right.
The devil couldn't take it. And the devil had to single me out and bring me down. So it's not my fault. Diabolus facet et ud facere a.
Yeah.
The devil made me do it.
Now, the judge would have to be a Flip Wilson fan to understand that.
You know, I'm so happy to hear you. I am a Flip Wilson fan. I never got over the fact that Flip Wilson is no longer... Flip Wilson, to me, was the ultimate... comedian?
He was just brilliant.
Yeah. He had this somehow this right off the bat. You were disarmed.
Right.
He told the funniest joke ever told.
Yeah.
And he did it on the Carson show.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. You got to look this up because I can't tell you the joke.
Okay.
It was a Flip Wilson original. He wrote it, and to me, it's got to be the funniest joke ever written.
I will look it up.
Now look it up, Flip Wilson, and you get Flip Wilson, and it will have it. And it's called the baby.
Okay.
Have you ever heard the thing of the mother and the baby, the woman and the baby?
Oh, possibly. I'm gonna have to look at it to refresh my memory.
Yeah. Well, the point is, it's a public train and a lady and her child are on the train.
Right.
But watch that.
Yeah.
And the way he delivered it is incredible.
Yeah.
Flip Wilson had a charm.
Oh, absolutely.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
He also used to hire on his show an old friend of mine named Ron Landry. There was a team called Hudson and Landry at the time.
Okay.
Ron was my roommate in school.
No way.
And I always appreciated giving Ron a big break there.
Oh, good.
Okay, where were we? I forget where we were.
we were talking about a certain former employee here.
Yeah. So, again, to me, the interesting thing now is how effective this is going to be in influencing the judge's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Judges are human. Judges are people.
Sure.
I don't know if I mentioned this, the William Hurt trial a few years ago in New York. William Hurt, the actor.
Yeah.
Very good actor.
Yeah.
If you ever see Kiss of the Spider Woman, that is an amazing
acting
job he did. Anyway, he was involved as a defendant. I think it was a civil action of some kind or other. The story of the time was that the judge, a lady judge, fell madly in love with the defendant and spent the trial sitting there with cow-eyed, teenage mooning over the defendant.
Right.
And there was a lot of complaints about that. The defense, prosecution, I guess, or whoever the other side was, had to keep waking the judge up and say, look, we're talking out here. Just quit. You're watching him. But judges are human. And it'll be very interesting to see how effective this stuff is. The thing is, it is cliche. I've never seen it to this extent before.
Yeah.
And Bernie Madoff, had the cojones to never try something. Like, well, Bernie manned up and said, all right, I've done it. It's off. We go to Scotland Yard.
So, right.
But this is a different thing. Moving on. Oh, getting back to New Jersey thing.
Sure.
The cry for marijuana.
Yes.
Goes on. This, and you get the point that if we do not somehow, and our elected representatives or the town representatives who are opting out, mm-hmm. and people do not accept this, they're going to figure out some way to come around to your house and give you marijuana in an enema.
Right.
They're getting that vociferous about this thing.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it's going to come to you in an Amazon Prime package. It's going to be drone delivered to your door. Whether you do you remember the story a couple of years ago about anyone who had iTunes on the Apple iTunes application on their computer, when they logged on, they had in their music library, this is where you store all your music, they had an album, newly released album by U2 in their music library. U2 just put it on everyone's iTunes account, whether you wanted it or not. When you logged in on this certain morning that it was released, there it was for free. You didn't ask for it, but there it was, and they were going to ram it down your throat.
The other thing in New Jersey now, a texting crackdown again, another
right.
law enforcement is coming down with all fours on people texting.
Which they do every year, right?
They do this that every part year. Of an I was amazed campaign. At the number of people they said that were ticketed last year.
Yes.
Because I see people constantly texting and using the handheld phone. People pay no attention to that, whatever.
Yeah. You would like to believe that this is one of those silly acronyms that people make up and doesn't really mean anything. But the acronym is FOMO, which stands for fear of missing out. And if you're in your car for an hour driving, that's an hour's worth of people posting pictures of their lunches and pets that you've missed. And so, you know, how are you going to combat that? Yeah, you're at a stoplight or you're stuck in traffic. Yeah, let me pull out my phone. You know, I've done it. I'll admit I've done it. Everyone I know has done it. But the problem is the people who can't differentiate between looking at their phone at a stoplight and looking at their phone at 75 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a difference there. Not that I'm saying that one is right and the other is wrong, but you have to know that difference.
Yeah, I saw a woman breeze by me. I say breeze. It wasn't like on an open highway. It was very fast for the major town in it. Came whizzing by on the right. I think I was making a left turn at the time. She came just whizzing through the light. And here's a woman actually holding the text thing up like that. But in the back of this big SUV, there's a whole bunch of kids back there carrying on, fighting,
right.
Rolling around back
right.
there. So what's going to happen here, evolutionarily,
right.
in a couple of generations, people are going to be born with long, pointy thumbs.
I totally believe it.
Responding, of course, to the challenge.
Sure.
Of the day. The okay, we had now the there was another Jersey. Oh. This gets back to politics a little
okay.
bit, and we just sort of jump around here.
Yeah.
But some of the presidential campaign is on.
Yes.
Of course.
Full swing.
And I wanted to point out to something that our own indigenous candidate, who has termed himself as Spartacus.
you were going to say something else.
Well, something else crossed my mind, but I caught it at the last minute. This is Senator Booker.
Yes.
Who was doing, I think, a very, very dangerous thing, because he's boiling this down into racial separation and division. And he appears, to me anyway, to be trying to arouse minority ill feeling up to revenge, if you want, or capitalize on that.
Right.
Now, and so he's calling himself Spartacus.
Yes.
Now, Spartacus, because he was the leader of this, it was a gladiator's rebellion. What I want to point out to him, he is not correct. He has the wrong man.
Okay.
There. The peasants' revolt in Russia during the time of Catherine the Great
right.
was led by a man named Yemelyan Pugachev, sometimes called the Pugachev Rebellion. And if you want, you can look that up.
Yeah.
That was the peasants' revolt that he's talking about, the downtrodden. The other, the Spartacus thing,
yeah.
he was like a rock star.
Right.
as the gladiators, the good gladiators were.
Right.
And
right.
So he was leading a revolt of the gladiators. But this was not a common popular uprising where these poor benighted peasants out in the fields, you know, were...
Yeah. Something tells me his PR people must have gotten in his ear and said, you know, Pugachev doesn't quite sound as sexy as Spartacus.
Well, yeah. There's been movies, Spartacus.
Right.
Who played that?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember.
For heaven's sakes, the Australian.
Well,
I think a lot of people have played it over a period of time. No, I don't. Oh, yeah, I did have Pugachev.
Okay.
There was a I forget what the movie was called. There was a very famous novella by Pushkin, Alexander Pushkin, the great Russian author, on that. It was called The Captain's Daughter.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Story. Mm-hmm. And so the movie was made. Van Heflin played Pugachev.
Right.
I remember that. If you remember Van Heflin.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful. Nobody remembers the people I do. Remember, I was born during the Hoover administration.
So, well, and that actually brings up a point that I was going to make earlier. You know, Herbert Hoover, I'm sure, very nice guy, not a good leader.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've had a lot of these.
Right.
Have we had, I don't know that we've had a really evil leader in this country.
Yeah.
I think we're maybe in the process. I'm not talking about the incumbent now, but I think what's coming up, we may end up that with so much of this built on.
Yeah,
on ego.
I mean, I think even all these years later, the worst you could say about someone like Richard Nixon was that he was deceptive. I don't believe he was evil.
I don't think he was evil.
No.
No. But again, some of the policies that he pursued and Lyndon Johnson before him, you could certainly put down as evil. The war,
right?
For example.
Right, right.
On the other hand, with Lyndon Johnson, you balance the civil rights advantages against the war. I think, in effect, the war certainly was more deadly.
Yeah.
You know, just talking, and if you want, and we're not talking about evil, but we're talking about apparently bad results. The George Bush administration, to me, would probably go down, people would take issue with this, of course, but that would go down to me as the probably most destructive.
George W. Bush.
George W. Bush,
yeah.
Or not his father, but the George W. Bush, the most destructive 8 years of administration in our history because of the terrible losses of the war, which arguably was not necessary in the first place.
Yeah.
So
much of what happened in that administration, I felt was reactionary to September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that response was entirely proportional.
At 7/11, after 7/11, the United States had the world in its hands. Everybody, even former enemies.
Right.
Everybody
right.
felt positive about it and some sympathy for this country.
Yeah.
The international relations, it was a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, somebody decides that Saddam Hussein has some weapon of mass destruction.
Right.
Which anybody should have known he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I listened. I'd been off on a trip up to North Jersey to a client lunch. And and it was broadcast. When Colin Powell, who was the Secretary of State, was making a presentation to the United Nations justifying the invasion of Iraq based on these weapons of mass destruction, he didn't have a case.
Right.
You could sit there. It was embarrassing listening to him trying to make a case for it, but he had to do it. That was his job, Secretary of State.
That whole incident was brilliantly recapped in the movie that came out last year, Vice, with Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney. And it was all about, it was basically a biopic of Cheney, but when he ascended to the vice presidency, how he pulled a lot of the strings, including essentially strong-arming Colin Powell to getting in front of the United Nations, like you said, and saying something that he really couldn't back up.
There's so much, a great tragedy. Is the course of mass public media in which the people, the population, get their information not based on factual observation of events, but everybody's propagandizing.
Yeah.
And the feeling is that they have to do that because it gets audience.
Yep.
And if you don't get audience, you don't sell advertising. And right. if you don't sell advertising, you don't get money.
Right.
And the people doing this, dispensing this, instead of being journalists, are essentially actors who are trying to become big stars,
yeah.
which they do.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you refer to them now not as a journalist, but as a news star.
Yes.
That's the current term that's being used. But yeah. so much deception that people buy. Now take, what is her name, Ocasional Cortez.
Right, right, from New York.
This gaffe that she made, and I don't know all the details about it, is telling about how the Republicans back in the 40s or whenever had tried to stack the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out it was Roosevelt, who was not a Republican. I think somebody should tell her
right.
that Franklin Roosevelt was not a Republican.
In the entire...
It was that the Democrats did it. And so here we get a person who has been given, for some reason, which is totally beyond me, a lot of power,
mm-hmm.
And who is almost illiterate.
Yeah.
Historically, in history.
You have to know your facts. Just off the top of my head, I can tell you, not for 1 second in the entire decade of the 1940s was a Republican anywhere near the Oval Office.
Yeah. Thomas Dewey got a sniff.
Right.
But only a sniff in 48.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Did I ever tell you, I don't know how many people have done this. I'm sure there's, I once saw in person, not terribly far away, seven United States presidents passing forward.
Really?
At the Eisenhower inauguration, I was a 18-year-old twit just gone into the Navy.
Okay.
And I was stationed at that time at the Naval Gun Factory in Washington, and it was a walk down to the Capitol.
Okay.
So they're going to inaugurate a president.
Sure.
So we got together, and we went down there, got there early and stood. Now, they had the inauguration, all the ceremonies, on the steps of the Capitol building.
Okay.
Not down the road. The parade started there.
Right.
But it all originated there. And then the people, the notables, got in their designated vehicles and went down.
Sure.
We were there where they started.
Okay.
So here we come out, and I'm standing there. Here's the kid standing there, like across the street, because at that time he didn't have huge, huge mobs for this,
sure.
like they have on the by the Washington Monument now, you see.
Right.
It was relatively modest. So here comes, first of all, Herbert Hoover.
Right.
And I remember he was a little man, Ellie, he's sitting up in a big carriage. He looked like a little pigeon sitting in there. And here is Harry Truman, who had become the president. Distinctly remember Lyndon Johnson, who was at that time a congressman, I guess, or maybe a senator from Texas.
He'd be hard to miss.
He was with a group of people in Texas outfits riding horses. it was a parade, great parade.
Yeah.
And they were throwing quarters out.
Okay.
Which actually you could buy something with at that time,
huh.
the people in the crowd. And then we had, Kennedy. I remember Jack Kennedy.
Right.
Who was a young congressman. And this is a skinny little kid. Like, he's older than I am. What's he doing there? He's got a swallowtail coat on marching in there. And then we had Gerald Ford.
Right.
Who was a later, these are people who later became president.
Right.
And who else? I mean, there were some others in the wood.
Well, Nixon would have been there.
Of course. Naturally, yeah. He was the vice president. He would have been right up in the front of it there.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon. And so I think the total count came up to about seven.
Yeah.
Who were past or former presidents walking by at the time. So it was a rather interesting
experience.
That's
phenomenal. Yeah. That's great.
So, and I also one time was standing in New York. It's amazing what you see.
Yeah.
And just happened to bungle across the St. Patrick's Day parade. And I decided I was going to cut across the street and almost bumped into Bobby Kennedy, who was marching in the parade. So, oh, man. Oh, life. It's great. But, hang on to it while you can.
Absolutely.
If they don't take it away from you in the meantime.
That's right.
Pat, thanks.
Thank you.
As always, enjoyed very much the conversation.
Thanks for listening to the new Jim Gerhart Podcast.
Still cooking, and it's bigger than ever.
From NJ1015.com.